Sacramento.
Glory, glory, Sacramento.
Roro with the goal.
Roro's going to take a shot. Oh, my. Do you believe it?
Cameron Nwassa charging forward, looking for a team to strike on distance. And it rattles in. Cameron Nwassa, the Sacramento kid.
That it was less about if and more about when Sacramento was going to join Major League Soccer. Well, folks, when is today? Your when has arrived.
Hello, Sacramento, and welcome to the Rise of the Republic podcast. I'm your host, Blake Marquez, joined, as always, by Richard Ivanowski. And what a game, Rich. How are you feeling about it, man?
Yeah, man, can't lie. I am impressed. I was impressed tonight. On the last podcast, I predicted a loss and a poor week from the team in general, this game and against Reno on Saturday. But yeah, man, I mean, and I thought that was, I was going to bank that one. I thought that I'd take that to the bank. It was, you know, after going down 1-0 and going down a man with the red card, I thought surely I had gotten this one right. But no, man, they absolutely fought back. I was totally wrong.
I think this game showed some real tenacity from the team. It really showed that you can't really count us out at any point. Another thing, it's not necessarily a positive, but it showed a real we've been dealing with this moment-to-momentness of us where we'll look really good for most of a game and let a team back in it. And there's been times where we'll look great as well. And, you know, it's kind of vice versa on this one where we, I would say for about 75 minutes looked like we were going to walk away with a loss on this one. And we fought back and looked great. And we had some players that are usually check marks turn into a little lower, not show up necessarily. And players that sometimes don't show up showed up and helped us out a lot this game. So, great for them for sure.
Yeah. Before we get to lineups, we'll do that in just one second. How did you feel about the overall energy and competitiveness and urgency of this team tonight?
The defense looked sleepy at first, and I think that showed from the goal. But I think we always looked willing to fight. We didn't have necessarily a lot of the best chances there in the beginning. I think Orange County seemed to have the better chances, but we always looked willing to put up a fight. I thought we looked like we were always going to score. I was getting a little iffy once Roro went off, but Villarreal coming in is what seemed to have woke us up a lot.
For sure. And I think Belmar as well. So we'll get to those subs in a minute. Let's get right to the starting lineup. It was the same as it was two matches ago. Mm-hmm. So just getting to – not going to be a lot of surprises here, but Diaz in goal, who we have to talk about. But McCrary at right back. We had Apollon, Mahoney, and Sargis as your other defenders. Skundrich, of course, as always, playing every minute in the middle. Roro started as well. Bijev, Formella and Werner, and Iwasa up top. Any surprises there? One more thing I want to mention about this lineup is the 18, which did not have either goal scorer from the Portland game. You know, the kids we talked about in length last episode, Juju Chavez and Mario Panagos both scored in the closing minutes. Neither of them in the 18 at all, both on the injury report that was put out on Twitter, although not on the injury report that was televised. So I don't know if there's anything to that. Maybe just the injury report on TV ran out of space because it was pretty long. But neither of them were there tonight.
Yeah, no, I don't really have much to say about like the injuries and stuff. But when it comes to the starting 11, it seems to be starting to become our strongest lineup. I wasn't surprised to see Fermella back out on the side. I thought that worked well, and we'll definitely get into that. Really, I think my biggest surprise, and not as far as performances go, but more or less just as kind of the way I thought things would go for the season, dating back until we signed him, was still no Tomas Hilliard-Arce in the starting lineup. Seems that Mark Briggs is choosing to go with Mahoney a little bit more in the starting, back four, which honestly, I don't know if you'll agree, but I like better.
Yep. I'm on board at this point. He did crack the 18. Notably, he was not in the 18 or the injury report from the game against Portland, but in the 18, you know, available as a sub, did not get subbed on, but slight upgrade for him there. And no, I think that the team has been pretty cohesive with him. Mahoney did get Team of the Week honors in the USL. He's had a couple assists this season. So, yeah, that one red card, he got a red card, two yellows, in a game that he had an assist. I think he could have taken that game, which was a strong performance. Could have ridden with that as a starter, but could not be played in the next game. And then, I think at this point he probably continues to ride this hot streak.
Yeah, definitely. I think Briggs is showing to be the kind of guy that will wait for you to go on, like you said, like go on more of a cooler streak before he chooses to put someone in your place. And then as long as that goes well, he'll ride that until the hot streak seems to end. And I don't hate it at all. I think that's the best way to do it. You still have people competing for their spots. But you know, I don't have any doubt that if Mahoney's form starts to drop, that Hilliard-Arce would be subbed right back in and put back into that starting lineup, no problem.
Yeah. So I do have some takes here. I think that I've been kind of critical of this team recently, mm-hmm. and I think I can attribute that to my nature to be contrarian. So when people are low on a team, I really like to look at why you should be buying them, why you should like them, why they're actually going to be better. And when people are really high on a team, I start to look for the cracks and try to find out reasons to be skeptical. Now we got 6 wins in a row, and I'm still really excited to look for reasons to be skeptical. I just something weird about me, but I do have some reasons to be skeptical, or at least I have an inclination to be. And I'll get to some of them in a little bit. I want to kind of parcel them out throughout the episode, but I'll just say, like, this starting 11, when I saw it, I was not excited by it. In fact, I was, like, bored. I was like, this group again. I don't know. Just after seeing them against Portland, where we saw no energy at all for 86 minutes, and then the two Academy kids came on and brought it, and I was like, oh, well, like, they got a win out of that. And so they're just going right back. They're going right back to it when I felt there should have been more changes. That was my feeling. And then I think that I was wrong about that, because there was a lot more energy throughout the match, in my opinion. Although I will say, I don't know that there would have been if there wasn't an immediate lapse in the first few minutes that put them on their heels, put them up against a wall. In the post-game press conference, Briggs said that. He said the team got put up against the wall. McCrary, who spoke in the press conference, said that it brought out the dog in them. I asked him specifically, I said, you know, did this team poke the bear by playing very physically tonight? And he said that, yes, they poked the bear, and the bear came out on top. So and he was, you saw him getting shoved around a lot. I think that this team got under the Republic's skin with one, that early goal, which we need to talk about. And then two, that red card on Roro put them in a bad place, right? Up, you know, in a corner.
Yeah.
And three, just that consistent physical play. Like, OC should not have played this. This is my big take for this game. OC should not have played this physically. Not because it's not a good general strategy for a defensive team like they are, but because they woke up this team and they shouldn't have done that. If they had just kind of laid back and kind of let them be complacent, let them be content, maybe that goal came later. Say they got that goal in the first few minutes of the second half. I'm not sure that this team would have woken up and been as fired up to come back and get this win.
Yeah, so you think they might have, like, maybe scored a little early. Is that kind of – am I hearing that correctly? I know you're talking more about, like, putting us up against a wall, but if we would have been put up against that wall a little later in the game, we wouldn't have had as many minutes in that irritable state.
They got hit in the mouth too soon.
Yes.
Like, this is what I was saying last week, right, with, like, the Mike Tyson analogy where – when you get punched in the mouth, that's when you have to start to figure things out. And again, and McCrary said this specifically, he said, we can't wait around to get punched in the mouth before we wake up, before we become competitive and engaged. But tonight, they only had to wait 4 minutes.
Or we just need to get punched in the mouth sooner. We've seen this happen. The opening game of the restart, we got scored on in the first 2 minutes, and we ended up scoring 3 goals after. Granted, that game did in a draw, but I think you're onto something when you're speaking of this fight back. We're gonna, you know, I was really excited when Panego scored his goal last week, and then we got scored on, and I was like, oh well, okay, it's gonna end 1-1. And then we're not done yet. We're going to win this game. I thought when we scored our goal, I was happy with that. 1-1, I'm happy with it. We're a man down. Let's take our point and get ready for the next game. No, we're not done yet. Like, we're fighting for these 3 points. And, yeah, I think it shows as emotional and as much of a roller coaster it might be for the fans and for the media, I think it's something great to watch. It's great to see that this team will not give up and is going to fight for that every minute, fight for those 3 points.
Yeah. I really like this sub as well. So let's talk about this goal first. We've kind of alluded to it.
Yeah.
So I was actually in class for the first half of this game, so yeah. I had to go back and rewatch the beginning and didn't get the full first half completely. It got some highlights and got about 20 minutes of it, 30 minutes of it at best. But yeah, I definitely saw this the first 5 minutes here, and so I mean, it's just like a lazy pass from Roro, or just like a strange pass. Like, it almost looked like he didn't even mean to really hit it, like, or like he just hit it wrong, or it's like not, he wasn't engaged. Like, this was like the not engaged team. Just,
yeah,
okay, ball comes to my feet, I'll just tap it back to Sargis. But there is a super engaged player, Oakley for Orange County, that is right there and is already hungry, already wants to score, and he takes it off him. And like, truly, it's an unstoppable shot. Rafa is not to blame at all. I don't even know how, like, Sargis even really gets to this ball, this slow rolling pass to him. What did you think?
I was kind of thinking to myself, and I felt like a lot of the fault definitely lied with Roro. It was definitely lazily put together. He looked to be on his heels a lot. I think when he tried to take that ball, like, control it with his left, if I'm remembering correctly, it kind of drops to his right. I think he was trying to control it with his left and then take a nicer pass to Sarges with his right, and I don't think it drops the way he wants it to. I think it lands under his foot, or not under his foot, but like kind of more under his hips, and he's not able to put the power on it he wants. The thing I really disliked about it was after the ball was off of his feet, the pass, you know, didn't have the power he wanted to, thus not getting to Sarges, but then he was right back on his heels, not really moving at all, just expecting the ball to get cleared, I'm assuming. But with it not being directly to Sarges, and I think a little bit of lack of experience, Sarges takes a really big windup trying to take it out of there. I would have liked to see him kind of just expect the shot and try to block it as opposed to trying to clear it. You know, I think a couple more years of experience, maybe a little more experienced player would have realized it was a losing battle as far as the clearance and just gotten in front of the shot.
That's definitely a fair criticism. I would like to see anyone in that situation just be more urgent and have more of a quick decision and a direction with what they're doing in the moment. And like, I do think immediately afterwards, everyone kind of put their hands up and looked at each other like, where were you, bro? Like, everyone is doing that to each other.
Yeah.
And that was frustrating, but I do think that was that early punch that woke them up. And then there was consistently physical play throughout the game that I think kept them awake and engaged. What did you think about the physicality tonight?
Yeah, I thought it was we were talking about from OC or just overall?
I think it was initiated by OC, but certainly matched, if not trumped, by the Republic.
I can agree with you on that. I thought it was – at one point the commentator said it, this feels like a playoff game. And I think in many sense we're starting to get there for sure. And I think in many sense with this game, it had that environment. It had that feel to it just because we're getting towards the end of the regular season. Teams are starting to fight for their places. Orange County's in a real brawl for their spots. And we have a little less pressure, but we're still fighting for clinching. I thought the physicality was understandable. I didn't think the ref had this game under control very well at all. Very often I find myself at the end of these games just like flabbergasted by some of the calls because they never seem like they ever favor a team, but they always seem inconsistent. And that's something I know we're going to get into when we start talking about the second half.
Yeah. There was a chance at the 30-minute mark, I think you wanted to talk about.
Yeah. Did you happen to watch this, this chance by Owosa?
Was this the interception breakaway moment?
Yes.
Okay. This is like right where I kind of tuned in around 30 minutes.
We've been talking about Owosa, and we talked a little bit about him last week. And I made the point of like, we love him when he scores. And I think what I was trying to say by that is when he had a 2-week period there where he looked to be really on and we were really into buying that stock, to use your analogy. But prior to that and going into now, we're kind of losing faith in him more. And I'm trying to decide, I'm caught in between two thoughts here on if he truly is in a bear market, you know, is he really losing his value or is he just in a rough patch? And I still haven't made my decision, but I think we're gonna see him have these moments, but I think he may be on the decline from here on out. And just to talk about this moment, and to tie it into my analogy here, I think Owosa from 2 years ago would have chipped this over the keeper and we would have been celebrating. I really think it was crazy because in my head I was like, if this stays on the ground, which it did, it's not going to go in because we have defenders pinching in from both angles and the keeper coming in from straight on. It can't stay on the ground, and it did. And I really think Owosa from 2 years ago would have chipped this over the keeper, found the only angle possible, which is up high, and we would have been celebrating the equalizer.
Yeah, I was – this just felt emblematic of the whole season in terms of finishing. I know finishing is a huge problem with this team. I wrote an article at the Sac B on offensive problems with this team, and they got a pretty good response, and I don't think that anyone would argue with it. Maybe a few players on the team wouldn't enjoy the criticism, but I know that Briggs would agree with me. I'm not saying that, but I believe that he would agree with me because I know how frustrated he has been in practices, at games, with the finishing, with the chances that are just completely squandered. And this was – so, like I said, I didn't see the entire first half. I saw the end, and I saw the beginning. But just looking at the stats for Iwasa, this was, like, the only thing he did, right? Like, I know he probably pulled a few defenders away to make some space like he always does with those little curling runs. But this was his only shot. No chances created, no, you know, crosses, nothing deflected or off target. This was pretty much, from what I can tell, like, you know, he only had 8 passes in the first half until, like, he didn't really seem to be doing much at all. Can you fill me in as someone who saw the whole first half?
Yeah, I mean, you're right, man. I forgot he was there sometimes. He looked like he wasn't there at moments. There was one other moment. I can't remember if it was before or after this squandered opportunity, but he made a good run down the sideline to give the overlap to Sam Warner, who was cutting in. And unfortunately, Sam didn't find him. I thought that was a really good looking opportunity. Judging by the way our finishing has been this season, I don't think it would have come to anything. But it was an opportunity that we never got to explore because Sam didn't find him. But really, other than that, those were the only times that he like really stuck out to me. I don't know. Where are you on Sam?
Or I'm gonna draw. Sam, yeah. Sorry. Well, actually, both of them. That's a good – I'm glad you asked that because I actually have some stats to drop on Iwasa and on Sam and on some other players from the research I did for my article. There are just some concerning numbers here. Like Iwasa, it's funny, you know, he's had the identical production in 2019 and 2018, 17 goals, 6 assists in both seasons, which is interesting. Like pretty consistent, I guess, but and those were in 33 and 35 games, so you know he's getting about a goal every other game, and then you know 6 assists, so maybe 1 goal to every 5 or 6 games. I mean, sorry, 1 assist every 5 or 6 games. And then this year now, 11 appearances, 3 goals, 1 assist. So in terms of production, that's 50%, essentially. Very close to it. His production has dropped by half. And then Sam Warner, he had 7 goals and 5 assists last year. 0 and 0 this year. So we can talk about either guy if you want. But does that strike you as interesting with Sam? He's appeared in every game. 0 goals, 0 assists.
That's really interesting because I didn't – I feel like if you would have asked me, I think I would have guessed that, 0 and 0. But I still think he's our best attacker out there as far as work rate and like the eye test. You know, I know at this level, at this with his position, he has to produce statistically. So I know I'm probably getting some eye roll saying that, but when you look at this guy, man, he takes amazing touches. His work rate is outstanding. No one's going to argue with me on work rate.
Work rate is a great point. I mean, you're absolutely right on work rate.
But production, right? Like that's you can put 5 things in the category of eye test. But if the production isn't there as far as statistics go, that's 50% of your judgment there. So, yeah, I mean, so I get it. I have trouble saying it. I know people are going to disagree, but I think he is you can't not play him. He can produce at any moment. I really think like he's going to do something really good for us at some point.
The work rate is excellent, and I think on this team that I really believe struggles with work rate until they go down a goal or until you know they face adversity. I think he'd be a great guy to start every game because he's going to be putting in maximum effort at the beginning, and mm-hmm. and quite frankly, not everybody does on this team. It feels like
yeah.
So, but yeah, but then at the end of the day, like maybe he's the guy you sub off first in most games, because unless he's going to put more stuff on target, which he really doesn't have a high on target rate. Sorry, a high. Geez, now I'm blanking out. I just wrote a whole article about this.
Like shots
accuracy.
On target.
Accuracy, yeah. Okay. Like his shot accuracy is poor this season, and his conversion rate is zero, obviously. So, like, until he puts one in the net, I'm not, like, attached to him for 90 minutes, certainly. But getting to subs here, so the other stat that I actually brought this up in our previous podcast, which got me into this, but it was zero on-target attempts for Carlton Belmar this year. He has scored 43 goals in the USL. He's a very productive USL player. That's his history, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he had no shots on target this season until tonight, where he had three. And he was your sub at 45 minutes for Cammy Wassa, and I loved it. I loved to see it. Remember when we did the buy and sell episode? Yes. Who was I buying on? Carlton Belmar. And yeah. I'd like to buy more. I would like to double down. His stock dipped since then, honestly, when he didn't play at all in the last game. There I was. Watching that stock plummet, I'm just buying up more, buying more, buying more. Here he comes. I really believe it. What did you see from Belmar on this sub and in the second half?
I think they call that dollar cost averaging in the investment world. Man, I was stoked to see him come on in the second half in the center of the park as a striker. I think that's something a lot of people have been wondering about, because that's kind of his true position. He wears the number nine. He's played as a number nine. He's a striker. And we've been seeing him on the wing, and the production has not been there. We've seen, one assist? Did that go down as an assist for him a couple games back?
Yeah, and I think he had another one tonight, right? Yeah. So that would add up.
I was excited to see him play as a striker, and it looked really, really good. I would not be surprised, knowing how Briggs likes to shuffle his team around and kind of what the signs are on when he's going to go with a different changeup in the line. I would not be surprised to see him start as a striker on, what is it, Saturday against Reno?
Yeah, he's been kind of like stuck out wide, I think. I believe the broadcasting crew, which, by the way, I was super happy to get back because we've been hearing a lot of road broadcasts.
Yeah.
Super happy to have those guys back. They mentioned this was his first minutes at striker, and he's been a striker when he's made those, you know, produced that 43 goal. All those goals of those, so the productions come at striker. So it was really nice to see him there. I tweeted out, like, I'm really excited for this. And, he was delivering, like, that header, you know, didn't place it perfectly, but he was there. He was doing it. It was work rate, getting back to work rate. His work rate was a noticeable improvement from Iwasa. And I'll say this, it's not even necessarily that I'm like all in on Belmar so much as I am like I'm in on the next attacker. Like, let me try to explain that better. So you're going to start your two wings, your striker and your sort of attacking midfielder 10 type, even though we've kind of been over that this team doesn't really use a 10, but it's often like a striker playing 10 that just kind of drifts forward. So
yeah,
but I want one of them subbed off at 45 minutes at half every time. So I want it, and I don't want to know who it's going to be. I would love it if Briggs said, look, all right, listen, Formella, Iwasa, Bijev, you got Werner, you guys, one of you is coming off at 45. Whoever doesn't give me the most effort, whoever gives me the least effort, you're coming off. And I'll just put on Belmar for you. Or other, you know, even if Belmar starts other way around, whether it's Belmar starting and Werner on the bench, like, look, one of you's coming off for Werner. Don't let it be you. Go out there, earn your spot. Yeah.
I really like that. So I didn't know where that was going at first, and I gave you a little eye roll when you first said it. But I really like that idea. Just like fight for your spot. All four of you guys, your second half is in jeopardy for this other guy. Because we know we got players that will come off the bench and at least have that work rate, especially if we're coming down, you know, down a goal.
Yeah, and they added Frank Lopez, signed a striker from OKC Energy this week as well, just a few days ago, who I think could kind of fit into that as well. I don't think he's going to come in and start. He certainly wasn't going to ever be a part of the plans tonight. I'm sure he has to go through, you know, medicals, and I don't even think the league has technically processed it yet. I'm not quite sure where they're at with that at this point in time, but it's a process. And then you obviously need to get familiarized with the coach and the other players in the system. But eventually I think that could be his role as like, all right, Iwasa, like you're going to give us a high work rate, or we're going to bring in Frank Lopez, or, you know, it could be someone else, but just to have that depth there will be a good thing.
No, I think that's a great idea. And yeah, we've talked about depth before. We definitely needed it, and it seems like this guy, from all the things I've heard, has that little bit of a bulldog mentality, that high work rate, and the finishing ability, which we've lacked. So I'm super excited to see, you know, to see how this turns out, especially with playoffs coming. I think form in the playoff system, you know, it cannot be questionable, and it has been. So if we can work some of that out from our front half of the team, then yeah, I'm getting prepared for the playoffs for sure.
Let's talk about this red card for Rogro. I think if we're going relatively chronologically, this is when we gotta get to it. 58th minute. You break this one down.
And I thought he was like definitely, I thought Roro was definitely trying to stop play. Definitely trying to, you know, get the foul, get that tactical foul. But I don't think anyone expected that to be a red card. The way I've been taught the difference between a red card and a yellow is, you know, obviously if you already have a yellow, which he didn't, but as far like straight reds, I guess, coming in from behind or something overly aggressive, like a punch or, you know, something violent or something where you're obviously trying to injure someone. But that big crucial line in the sand being, if we're talking just fair play, coming in with a tackle from behind. That's not what this was. I definitely don't think it was a yellow card, and I don't think I would have expected it to be yellow. Sorry, let me say that again. I didn't expect this to be a red card, and I don't think I would have expected it if I was a neutral or even a fan of the opposing side. I thought it was really light.
Yeah, so this is going to be part of where my amateurism as a soccer fan gets me in a dicey spot. You know, being my first year covering soccer, I don't know. I don't have a good register of what's a red and what's a yellow, where that line is exactly. And I'll tell you, it's been muddled by the feedback I've seen looking at the reporters and the fellow podcasters out there on, you know, Republic Twitter. It was really split. There were people out there saying no way that's a red. And there are people saying that's an obvious red. And then even someone who said they thought it was a yellow should be a yellow. And then they went and looked at the replay and said it's a red. So like it was really split down the middle. And what I'll say is this, from perhaps the best player on the team and perhaps the most experienced, arguably definitely the most experienced in the first team, you deserve it, I think. And I don't even think that he'd be upset with me saying that. I think it was a lapse in judgment on his part. And even if he didn't deserve the red, he earned it by being sloppy. I think, and in a macro sense, like, you have to understand the situation that you're in. You have to understand that, like, this ref is not calling a tight game and maybe looking for a statement to make. Maybe that's asking a little too much, but he's a really smart guy and he's a really experienced footballer. And I just think, like, you don't give the ref the chance to give you the red there.
So I was watching this with a friend, like I usually do. And I'm pretty sure he was leaning more towards the red as well. I wasn't, obviously. One thing, going back real quick, another line in the sand is if you see any type of foul like that, that would be considered like a tactical foul to try to break up play. If you're the last defender, that's always going to be a red as well, because it's basically stopping an obvious goal scoring opportunity. Right. Just wanted to throw that in there for your knowledge bank there, Rich.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Where I justified it in my head being the ref is, I think from where he was standing, no fans in the audience or in the crowd per se, I wouldn't be surprised if he heard something, if he heard the collision. He was so close. He had such a good angle on it. I think he probably heard something. It probably looked a lot more harsh than maybe we saw, because from that first replay, that first, like, the live feed, it looked really soft. You go back, you watch the replays, it looks a little more harsh. And then I think if you are, you know, down on the field, able to hear stuff, that probably swings your vote a little more. So I'm not really mad at the ref on this. Like you said, everyone's split. So you were saying Republic fans were split too on this.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Like, and even the people that could have just kind of hid behind, I want my team to get every call. That wasn't the impression that I got. There were people that were very frustrated at this moment. And I just think, like, if this was Penagos or Chavez, right, then I'm like, oh, you're being really hard. I know it's a terrible excuse, but like, oh, you're being really hard on this guy that maybe doesn't know better. But like, when you see it from Lopez, and I don't know. I mean, I don't want to read too much into it. I wasn't there tonight, obviously. But I wouldn't be surprised if there were some things building up, whether it was chippiness physically or, yeah, like what he was maybe saying to other players, or I don't know. Like, it just felt like a moment for the ref to kind of assert himself. And yeah, you should never do that. Like, it's not your job as a referee to put your stamp on the game. Your job is to fairly dictate play, to mediate it. But this game was very physical, and it does feel like a statement from the ref to be like trying to get things in control.
I can get on board with that. I'm not angry either way. I mean, things worked out for us. One thing, and I was texting you, I think you probably felt my frustration building. The ref got a stamp on this game. We saw McCurry and Palmer from Orange County really start to get into it. Especially, it was building up, but especially after this red card. And at one point, we saw Palmer shove McCurry down to the ground. Do you remember this?
Well, yeah. I mean, you said at one point, but yeah, I remember a couple.
Yeah, I mean, and it was getting really, really harsh. And well, I'm talking specifically at the one point where he received the yellow.
Yes.
And I completely lost my cool when about 5 to 7 minutes later,
he did the exact same thing.
Did the exact same thing, and got another warning.
Yep.
That to me shows the biggest, like, that's inconsistency. That right there, like, you cannot, like, that yellow card is supposed to be your last and final, you know, your final warning. You do not do anything again. And he did it again. Like, that was outrageous to me. I couldn't believe it. I thought they should have been a man down as well. 10v10, let's go out there and get a win.
Yeah, this is, again, I think the ref putting his stamp on the game. In this case, it's like not the same way of like, I'm here, guys, like, pay attention to me. But like, I don't want to assume too much about the referee's mindset, but you see this type of thing in the NBA. There's like makeup calls where a player, you see a referee call a foul and you're like, oof, that probably shouldn't have been a foul. And then he lets him get away with one next time. Or he doesn't call a foul on a guy and it should have been an obvious foul. And then he'll call him on some BS later. This to me felt like the ref is like, I want the balance of the game to be like this. So I'm not reflecting my individual decisions based on the actual moment, but of what I think should happen. So like, maybe he's thinking Roro is playing far too aggressively and I'm not going to let this stand when I give him this red. But then later, like, he's thinking, well, they don't deserve to lose a man, so I'm not going to put another yellow on Palmer. Which is bad, which is nonsense, but it felt to me like the ref is thinking a little too much.
I've been in games like that. I've definitely, yeah, okay, that makes sense. I've been in games where it's like, oh, wow, the ref, like, I'm a defender, so I get, you know, usually the call is going to go against me. So it's like, oh, the ref really gave me a break there. And, you know, I'll get off and I'll like ask a teammate, how did I not get a call for that? And a lot of times it's like, we deserved a break there. I think the ref was just helping us out a little bit. I get that.
And I'm not trying to make excuses. I'm specifically saying that it's bullshit that he did this.
No, I mean, it is, and games shouldn't be. I would like to know. I eventually want to try to do some reffing courses to try to ref for local games around. I would like to know if that's something. I don't know if you know. If not, I'd like to hear your opinion. Do you think they kind of like off the books teach that, like, hey, we know we're gonna make mistakes, here's a way you can make up for it? Or do you think that's like taught, like, do not try to do this, but it happens because of psychology?
I think it falls under the unspoken rules.
Okay.
I have no insight on this whatsoever, but just from other sports, I think that there are unspoken rules about it. Yeah. You would never teach that, but I think it's like something that I think you're aware of it. And it's not a good thing. If something happens and you decide it's a yellow card and then the exact same thing happens, it has to be a yellow card. Like, you've established that precedent. Like, you've made your calling of the game meaningless at that point. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I will say this though. I think the refereeing was harsh for them, but I think that it was a good thing. I think that red card woke them up again. Playing down a man woke them up. I think it was like, okay, well, we're in the corner and we're gonna fight like animals to get out of it.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with that. They needed another punch in the mouth.
All right, so let's talk about these goals and also talk about the Jaime Villarreal sub, because I thought that he played very well. In my article, I suggested that Villarreal maybe be put in the 11, and I feel good about that after tonight. But that sub came on first, and then that was 69th minute, and then the goal in the 79th. So we can talk about kind of both these things at once. But what stood out to you here?
With Villarreal, just, you know, fresh feet, more, you know, breaking up the play from the back, just really, really hungry. I thought distribution, it was our best bet without Roro, I thought, as far as distribution went. We know he can do it, and he loves to take a shot outside the box, which actually overall in the first half I thought was like, we had some pretty good shots outside of the box, just tracking back on that. But overall, I was really happy. It was another, like, oh, here's another reason for us to be better. Here's another reason for us to equalize. This is a step in the right direction.
Yeah. So this goal, I want to know how aware you think Formello was on this deflection, because I know Evan Ream, who was a podcast guest on this podcast recently, friend of the pod, Evan Ream said he, you know, just tweeted about, I'm not sure Formella knew that he was like deflecting that shot.
Me and my buddy got in like, not an argument, but we were like really disagreeing with each other on this, because he thought he was just like happened to be there and it went in. I definitely think he like directed it into a spot that the keeper wasn't going. I don't think it was like the prettiest thing that you would see like in the Premier League, but I think he meant to be there and meant to touch it. Is that what we're debating, or did I just have like the debate wrong here?
No, that's what we're debating, because do not think he meant to touch that ball. I do not think he had any idea what he was doing in that moment. I think Belmar took a great rip on that shot, and more power than accuracy, just putting shots on goal. And guys were doing, just by the way, like, that's what this team was doing and should have been doing. And you saw it especially after moments like the red card and after the first goal. I saw Apollon put a great shot on goal, just ripped one, you know what I mean? This was just Belmar's like, I'm tired, I'm fed up, I've been put in the corner here, down a goal, down a man, just gonna put some shots on, just fire him on target. And I think Formella had no idea it was coming, saw it like was going to his feet, like, in half was trying to get out of the way, half was just, I mean, it's bullet time, man. Like you said, it's not like some Premier League like redirection. The commentators, I will say, were very kind and were like, oh, look at that. I think he saw that coming and just flicked it off the back of his heel. Like, no, it just ricocheted off of his shin.
I don't know. Do you think the keeper would have gotten it if that didn't happen?
Yeah, I do. And so I guess credit, but like, I think Formello is like, oh, this is coming at me and I need to do something, because if it just hits me, it's going to roll in the wrong direction. So let me just like try to move. And like, I think he was honestly just trying to get out of the way almost entirely, or trying to do just something. I don't think that, and like, I'm not trying to be too critical here, because I don't think anyone on this team in that amount of time in that position could have like made a great decision and like put a great deflection intentionally into goal. But I think he was just like, oh, here it comes, and I'm just gonna do something and hope it works. And it worked, but I'm not gonna be like, oh my gosh, what a brilliant goal from Formella.
Okay. You're kind of convincing me, man, because I like keep, I'm envisioning it in my head, and you're kind of convincing me.
Well, he sold it. He really celebrated it.
He really sold it. That's what's
took credit for that thing.
And that's what swayed me back.
And then the commentators really sold it too. And credit to them, that's what they're supposed to do. But yeah, even I would give it, probably wouldn't have gone in if he didn't touch it or if he wasn't there to deflect it, because it's a pretty directly hit shot from pretty far away, you know? Like a keeper, he stopped goals like that before, stopped shots like that previously, probably would have gotten to that one as well. I think it was fortunate. And I think honestly, a lot of this game was fortunate up until this point. I think these are two really evenly matched teams. And I wanted to get into this as well. These are two almost identical teams.
Hold on 1 second, because I can feel a transition and I hate to break it down.
No, go ahead.
This was the perfect moment to bring this up. Formella's stock is rising, especially in this game. From, I don't think it was his first touch, but from the beginning of the first half, the beginning of this game, I noticed, and I hope you did too, this man's touch was on today. This ball was, it was like he was a waterbender, just putting the ball exactly where he wanted it. And do you not agree?
I mean, not really.
What?
Like, I agree, but I'm not where you're at. I'm like, it was a good game for him, but I'm not like, I'm just saying you're buying for Melo stock. I'm still looking elsewhere for my investments.
Do you agree that, because we've seen him play back centrally last game, he's better out here, right? You have to give me that.
Out wide?
Out wide, yes.
Absolutely.
Okay.
We've been saying that for a long time.
Well, I think this could have been, you know, because arguably form could have been dropping from last game if we saw him, because he played poor last game. If he played poor again here while he was out wide, I think that's an argument more of he was on a hot streak then. But now we've seen him boost up again. He's out wide again. I think that's his spot, or at least as a sub, or I think that's where he plays now.
He is super duper not a 10.
Super duper not a 10. I agree, man. I agree.
And so, I think in that sense, his stock's rising because he's played in a position that's much better for him. It was a good game. I'm not like, I don't know, man. I don't know. We can revisit player stocks and who we want to see in the lineup going forward. But I do want to just talk about just how even these teams are. It's something that I definitely noticed when writing the article, but I also want to give some props again to 916 Republic podcast for really outlining how identical these teams are in basically every sense: goals scored, goals allowed, chances, passing percentage, possession. Like, these are two teams built very similarly. They're defensive teams that struggle to score. Their strategies are different. Their tactics are different. But in terms of their production, it's almost identical. So I've been using the 538 tool a lot recently for the article and for some tweets and stuff. And it was interesting that they had this game. This, by the way, if you're not familiar with 538, to you, Blake, or to anyone listening, it's probably the most advanced statistics model for sports projections. They do a lot of really great stuff with the NBA, so that's why I'm familiar with them there. They do player projections, they do team projections, all these different methods going years in advance. It's really good.
I'm Googling it right now.
Yeah, they do like political stuff. They're kind of famous for projecting Hillary Clinton to win when she didn't. Like, that was like their one big mess up, but they're usually really good. Like, they can call stuff based on small sample size. They're a great analytics company, and they projected this game dead even. They said 35% chance Sacramento wins, 35% chance Orange County wins, 30% chance there's a draw. And none of the games have been like that. They really pick a team and they stick with it. And they've been pretty close to right. Like I think they got something like 7 out of the first 10 right, or 8 out of the first 10 right, and that's including who wins, loses, or draws. So like they're picking draws, like, you know, give them the credit for the draw, all that stuff. So anyway, long story short, they have them almost as identical teams in their profiles, in how good they are offensively, how good they are defensively. This to me was going to be about which team got the most lucky breaks. And I'm not sure that's what ended up happening necessarily, but it did feel like that. It did feel like the first goal for Orange County was kind of a lucky break. And it felt like this goal to me, kind of a lucky break, the deflection. The red card was very unfortunate for Sacramento. And then they capitalized on that. So that it turned out that it wasn't about luck at the end. It was about resilience. It was about fighting through. It was about finding that dog and that fight in yourself and the fight in the dog and all that. When the odds were against you in the end, they proved this was not about luck. It was about determination and force of will. And the final goal from Bijev was not luck. That was a great goal from Villian Bijev in the 87th minute.
Yeah, it was classy. The angle was not there. In fact, he had to touch the post to score it. It was really, really good. I was actually like, I was looking at the subs. I'm like, man, there's not really an option for him to come off. But I would have, if there was a kid on board, I would have definitely subbed him out around, 75, 80th minute. But no, proved me wrong. Didn't have to come out until right towards the end of the game. We had a little bit of a injury. Hopefully nothing serious from him, but it was class. I thought it was his only like good moment of the game. He played and he did his thing, but he looked kind of just like a placeholder up until then. Do you agree, disagree? What do you think?
Oof. I mean, hot take. It might be his only good moment of the season. love you, Villian. We said on this podcast, you're a favorite player on this team to start the year. I think he's had a tough run, but he certainly bought himself back some favor with this one. Beautiful goal, one of the better goals of the season. Can't deny it. Can't take anything away from it. Certainly hope he. The injury wasn't serious, but yeah, man. I mean, I don't really have anything to say about this other than class goal from a guy that I honestly wasn't expecting at this point to put in one of those.
Was that his only goal of the season, or did he score one a few games ago?
He had a PK. He
scored a PK?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Who was that against?
That one was, I believe, recently after returning from the break. Because I remember Iwasa scored the first PK against Reno. And then the next game, or two, the next PK, I think they've only taken two, right?
Right. There was a second one against Reno again.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Wow.
But no, no live action goals outside of that one. I mean, I think it was his best moment of the. He had that little drop off assist to Cam for his 50th.
Yes, that's. I think that's what I was thinking.
That was a nice moment. But you said it on the last podcast. Don't want to call you out here. I mean, we both probably should be called out. You said Bijev was the weak point of the attack. I said Formella. We both might be wrong. I don't know. How do you feel going forward here?
I'm more stoked on Formella than I am Bijev. Both goals aside, I think Formella seems to have more like upward trajectory in my book. Bijev, let's see some more. Maybe he's sensing that this might be. This is the end of the season. He's running out of time to prove himself valuable to the team. I don't know where we're at with rebuilding, where we're at with him in particular, but like it's about time this guy shows up. He's all, to me, in my opinion, he's kind of always been a iffy guy, kind of a rotational guy. I guess the term would be like, don't hang your hat on it. Like don't on him. I don't know how it goes, but like, don't rely on him. He's going to produce here and there, but you're not going to like expect him to be a super sub and pull you out of a game. He helped us out this game for sure, but he's a moment by moment player in my book for sure.
Going forward, so I'll tie it in like this. I think Roro had his worst game of the season tonight. It's probably not really up for debate.
I agree. Yeah, for sure.
Who going forward, is this – I mean, you said you were pretty relatively comfortable with this lineup. I think you said it might be the best lineup. Are you just good with this going forward?
I mean, we've seen two new players come into the team in the last 2 weeks. They're not coming in for fun necessarily. I don't think Frank Lopez is a depth guy. I think he's going to get some real minutes. We'll see. I mean, like I said, we're pretty deep there. I don't think he'd be bringing him in if there wasn't an obvious issue. We know Mark recognizes it. We know it's, you know, everyone sees it. There's an issue with goal scoring, so I think Frank's going to get some real minutes. I kind of lost the question there, Rich. What was it?
Just we kind of talk about lineups going forward each time, what we'd like to see, any changes or, you know, keep it the same.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what are you looking – what would you like to see going forward? Are you good with – at this point, I think we're more talking about the attack. But, yeah. I mean, are you good with Werner on one side, Formello on the other, Bijev at the 10, Iwasa up top?
I would like to see Belmar get more minutes in the 9 and maybe a second, like an actual second striker. Not necessarily, but like because that's where, you know, we'd maybe like Belmar and Frank Lopez. But even seeing Asha Paulin come up into the mid again doesn't like freak me out. Like I'd like to see how that is.
Yeah. I worry that it's too late for experimentation.
We're getting there for sure. I agree there. I think we're definitely getting there.
We're getting there. Probably certainly too late for experimentation with formations. But I would be intrigued by that. I think that was another thing I threw out there in that article. Like, you could play two strikers in a three-man back line if you're comfortable with Ash or Shannon and McCrary on the other side, kind of in that wing back, right? So I don't know. I think I'd probably throw that away. It's probably too late to change to a three-man back line. But
yeah.
Yeah, I will say, yeah, I don't know where Belmar quite fits in. It might be a super sub thing because I don't know that. I mean, he pretty much is a striker, and then Frank Lopez pretty much is a striker, and Iwasa pretty much is a striker. Belmar's been played out on the wing. He's not been very successful there, although I like the potential. So I don't know. Formella certainly has been productive when on the wing, so I can't be too mad at that. Werner, you know, like the work rate, I'm not exactly sure where to go with it. So I don't know. I guess
you could have to see where it goes. You could sit Cam for a few games, have Frank Lopez come in as a sub, or have Belmar come in as a sub, but rotate them two in the 9 spot as a striker.
Yeah.
Maybe. You know, we don't know exactly when Frank Lopez is going to be ready, but I'm assuming, I mean, he's got to be fit. Maybe he's got to get a little bit used to our playing style, but it's nothing too crazy. I figured probably not going to play this weekend, but the next game against, what is it, Tacoma? I don't see why he wouldn't be at least on the bench for that one.
I think ultimately my concern still comes down to the 10. So, yeah, I'm going to go back to my request from last week where move Roro up to the 10. I don't – that he, you know, BJ would still be the guy that I would take out, and I would play Villarreal next to Skundrich behind Roro in that central midfield box-to-box. I loved the energy and the effort I got from Villarreal tonight, so give me him and Skundrich kind of just box-to-box all game, and I'm pretty happy with that. And hopefully Roro can, you know, after his red is dealt with, he can be maybe he comes back in a more attacking mentality.
Dude, I didn't even think about him not being able to play next game until you just said that. That's hilarious. Yeah, so, I mean, is that kind of your answer for, I guess, what comes up as the next question being what's the lineup for next game with no Roro?
Good question. And I would just slot in Villarreal and then probably you just keep Bijev out there for that game, especially since you kind of reward him for that goal, right?
Yeah, you're going to have to. Yeah, give him a little bit of a pep talk and let's see some more of that.
Maybe be prepared to bring him off sooner than 87th minute. I think he's a little bit. I mean, we've talked about his energy for a long time on this show, and I think at this point, like, I mean, he should have probably come off sooner. I know he had the goal late, but maybe he should have come off sooner.
There just wasn't anyone.
Yeah.
Really. I mean,
Penagos. It's Penagos. Really, how about this? Mario Penagos.
Number 10?
Yeah, like subbing on at the 10. You say, Bijev, look, we know you're growing or hamstring or whatever got tweaked. Give us just 45 minutes or 60 minutes. Something like that.
I don't hate that idea. I mean, it's tough against a team like Reno coming up next, but I don't hate that idea, but Reno is one of those games you just don't want to lose to Reno, man.
Yeah, and that's a good transition for me to get into what I want to be my final point. If you have other stuff you want to bring up, feel free to pop in, but getting back to the 538 projections, right? This was really a revelation for me to realize the battle that Sacramento has to be real contenders. Do you consider them real contenders to win this league, to win the playoffs?
No, I mean, I think we're going to lose to Phoenix. Yeah. I think everyone's going to lose to Phoenix, at least in the West.
Yeah.
They're too good.
And I don't know why, like, it doesn't occur to me more often, but they play Phoenix. They're probably going to play Phoenix in the first round.
Are they?
I mean, that's how – if the season ended today, that's certainly how it would look. I'll double check on the points, but I mean, even though they've beaten Reno head to head, it's goal differential that decides it, and Reno, they can't catch Reno in goal differential. So I mean, it's almost, so yeah, like right now it's even 24 points apiece, but Reno has a game in hand and a 10 advantage in goal differential of 10. An advantage. So, I mean, yeah. I guess they say Sacramento beats Reno again, which is crazy. They play them two more times. This year is so weird.
So weird.
They play them two more times. So, I mean, I guess you beat them head to head twice. You know, you go 4-0 against them. Then, you know, you get 12 points off them. Like, fair enough. Then you'll face a team like Orange County or LA Galaxy, who, by the way, beat them earlier in the year. You'll face one of them in the first round, but then you're still getting Phoenix second round. So, like,
would you rather play? I mean, so we're gonna play Phoenix, right? If even if we do great, we're Phoenix. I don't know who's gonna lose, who's gonna beat Phoenix.
Yeah.
Other than hopefully us, would you rather play them sooner rather than later, or would you hold them off?
I mean, you don't want to go to Phoenix. If we don't top Reno in the standings in Group A, this team is going to Phoenix.
Yeah.
And they will be beaten in Phoenix. That was the big takeaway for me. Like, looking at the past winners of this league, the past 3 years, the winner of it all finished top two in goals scored. It's like, this team is a goal-scoring league. I mean, this league is a goal-scoring league, and it's won by goal scorers, and Sacramento is not a goal-scoring team. They're 22nd in goals. And, you know, I actually talked to Mark Briggs, and I asked him, like, are you a defensive coach? Like, just based on how things have gone this year, you seem to be favoring defense. Are you a defensive-minded coach? Do you prefer defense first? And he said, he said defense wins championships, but then he quit. He's like, oh, there's that old adage, defense wins championships. But no, I'm not. I like to think that I've been known for my aggressive attacking style of football, and I think that's what you need in this league. You need a good defense, but you also need a good offense. So, and then I like looked it up. And I'm like, okay, well, defense does not win championships in this league. So, at least not recently. So, I think the best case scenario is you win this group, and then Orange County or LA Galaxy come to town and you can handle them. And then you pray that Reno travels to Phoenix and wins, and then you beat Reno at home again for like the fifth time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only way I see it happening.
Yeah, that's great points. That's really insightful, that thing from Mark Briggs, because I definitely have that feeling of him being I feel like he's an attack-minded coach as well. But we have a very defensive team and a terrible finishing. But who knows? Maybe if we get some better firepower and some real clinical finishing players in, maybe we'll see a whole new Republic next season.
Yeah, this team needs to get so much better on offense between now and when they go to the MLS. Like, it's got to be an insane jump. Yeah.
I feel like this is a good wrapping up point, but let's do our top three really quick and maybe a quick prediction for Reno and get the heck out of here.
Yeah, start us off.
My number three is it's only because he scored a goal, going to be Bijev. He gave us the winner, but overall, we've said it enough. I'm going to make it quick. We got a body language issue here. And it looked a little less than usual, but he definitely didn't seem very on. I can pretty much agree with you when you say best moment of the season. Best moment of the season for sure, but you said earlier it's probably his only good moment of the season, which is pretty harsh, but I can't necessarily disagree with you there. But, nonetheless, he got us a winner. He looked great in that moment, and that's what counts the most. Hope to see more of that as we realize the moments become more and more important as we need to make up a 10-goal deficit.
Yeah, it's definitely fair. I'm going to agree with you and go Bijev as my third man of the match. Yeah, I think you said it all there. I'll give you my number two right now. My number two is going to be Jaime Villarreal. I kind of spoke on it earlier, but I liked what I saw from him, so he's going to get my number two.
Interesting. So that's based off of just this off-the-bench performance, coming in, taking control of the midfield with 10 men on the field and kind of holding it down for those final few minutes?
Yeah, I mean, he played almost half an hour, so I think that he – and, he – was in during the entire two goal. I mean, he came on, down a man, and he was part of that two goal comeback shorthanded. So, and the energy was just there for me. And I think for some reason, I'm just all about energy right now. It's all vibe check for me.
Yeah. So for my number two, I have Rafael Diaz. I mean, I think the stat ended with four saves, but he did a lot of good cleanup play. He just really made himself an important player in this game. Four isn't the most saves you can see from a keeper, but I think he stepped up in some really crucial moments. I definitely think that Orange County could have put this game away, and he made himself present in those moments. Once we went a goal up, I was thinking to myself, I'm like, man, they're not going to get past Rafael, even if they can get past our defense, which they were. I don't think they're going to get past him, because even the only goal they scored was kind of fluky, not necessarily a goalkeeping error at all, not really getting past the defense, just taking advantage of a mistake. I thought he really stepped up and was a crucial part to this win today.
Man, you have made me look like a fool, because I totally forgot about Rafa. I even said in a tweet that I think he's been the best player of this season at this point, that he probably is the MVP of the team. But yeah, I unfortunately left him off my list. You got a better list than I do this night. And I'll give you my number one, and it's probably not going to be your number one. Maybe it is, but I'm buying stock. It's Carlton Belmar.
Wow.
I think that goal, to me, more credit to Belmar than Formella for me personally. And he also put that header on. He had three shots on target in just one half. That is sufficient to me to be sure. This game, I don't think that their public win this game if he's not subbed on for Iwasa.
He made himself important. He stepped up. I think he could have been any other game. He's just a piece to the puzzle, just a placeholder, as I've called other players. I think he really stepped up, looked really good this game. I don't disagree with him deserving to be in a list. Didn't make mine, but yeah, he did great. I want to see him play more in this position. I don't think his spot is out on the wing. Not critiquing that pick whatsoever. My number one, though, probably predictable, is for Mella. And you know, it's the goal topped it off. I like to kind of do a first half and a second half and kind of think about things overall throughout the game and not just take it by moment to moment. I know you disagree here, but I thought Formella's touch looked outstanding this game. I thought he had the best touch on the field. There was little moments, man, even after the goal, where he had a crazy touch, the near camera touch line, where he's bumping balls around with his chest, stopping balls like right on a toe. Just I thought he looked outstanding with his touch. His runs are predictable. They've always been kind of just you're gonna cut inside. We know you're gonna get in towards that box, try to get a ball fed to your strong foot and put one in. But the touch is what stood out to me. Obviously the goal. One little thing I want to point out is there's this idea. It's an old Sun Tzu like art of war thing where you want to attack the enemy where they aren't, basically like where they're not expecting it, right? And that's the same with this with these moments in soccer when you have a ball fed to you, the goalkeeper is going to go somewhere, usually towards you because he expects you to go near post, and you want to take it the other way. And I really think that's what he was trying to do. I really think he expected that keeper to be coming towards him to block that shot. And I think he knocked it the other way because he expected the keeper to leave that hole open at the far post. Either way, the real outstanding thing that stood out to me from him was his touches throughout the game, first and second half. I thought it was an outstanding performance.
Yeah, I'm not gonna argue with you. It's I think a lot of it comes down to how much intention was on that redirection. But regardless, much better game from him. We've said it before. Let him be in that left wing spot like forever. Just that he's so productive there. Just keep him there. But yeah, that's. That's it for me, man. We'll talk about Reno real quick. We're running long here, but I'm just going to say it. I'm going to keep doubling down, tripling down, quadrupling down. I'm calling a loss. And if I am the reverse jinx that this team needs to win 7 straight, so be it.
Is it home or away?
It is home.
I'm going to say a draw. Let's go 1-1. I think they score a penalty. I'm going to do really specific. I think they score a penalty against us, and B-Jev will score the equalizer.
Wow. Oddly specific.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. I'll call it 1-2. So 2-1 in Reno's favor. I just think this club is – I just think they're like – just skating by. That one other thing I'll mention, I'm sorry I keep referencing my article, but I like did a bunch of research on it. It's the first time I've ever written soccer commentary. It's not an interview. There are no quotes. It's not a regurgitation of what the team is saying or like basic wins and losses. This was my attempt to look deeply at the numbers and be like, here's something that I didn't know before I wrote this. Another thing that just stands out, this team only has ever won one game this season by multiple goals, and it was against a not great team. But these teams that are the real deal and like are favored on these projection models to win it all, your Phoenixes, your Tampa Bays, your Pittsburghs, your San Antonios, and even Reno, they're winning lots of games by multiple goals. Reno put 7 on Portland the other day. Like, this team went to Portland and was gonna lose 1-0 until 2 17-year-olds came in and scored, like, because of fresh legs on a bad defense. Reno put 7 on them. So, like, I think they're the better team still. And I think that, like, these little 1-0, 2-1 victories, that I don't think it's gonna last forever. I can't see it.
I don't think, real quick. I don't think it's going to last in the playoffs. That's why I don't think we will go far in the playoffs. But I think for the regular season, this rope-a-dope, go a goal down, fight back, find a way, I think that's what's going to get us through into the playoffs. I think it'll help us out against Reno. It'll certainly help us out against the other two teams, Portland and Tacoma. But yeah, it's not. I'm not super strong on us in the playoffs, and for the reasons you mentioned. But I think it'll get us through these regular season games at least with a point each, with our last two games against Reno.
I think they lose the game to Reno. It may not be this one. This one's at home. So like, if I had to bet on them to lose one, I think it's the away game at Reno later on. But I cannot see this team just absolutely just destroying Reno in a season when they've been the better team against mutual opponents all year. Anyway, that's it for me, man. I'm going to wrap it up here. Thank you all for listening. This was a long one and a late one. I'm going to try to get this one up tonight. It's midnight right now. That's a late night goodbye from us. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for listening. Please rate the podcast, subscribe it to it, review it. Boy, sleepy time tea up in this one again.
Good night.
No, you got to say it creepier.
Good night.